Love when you interact with us, whether it's on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. It's brought to you by your local Midas franchisees, Chicagoland Midas franchisees. But check it out today, twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Jason Honeycutt had a funny comment here. Then we'll get into all the things I just mentioned. He says it's going to be like Scooby-Doo, where the gang is going to find a twin of Lucas Giolito tied up and gagged in the concession stands. Then they unmask Giolito pitching lately in surprise. It's Dallas Keuchel. Would have gotten away with it if it wasn't the leadership council.
Right.
It's a
Lucas Giolito has been more this guy than the guy that had you entertained for a while. Like, he has had more starts like yesterday than he has had good starts recently.
But, man, think about it. He got bailed out of the first inning because of the terrible strike on Bregman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
I thought the plate umpiring again in this series was just awful.
That's why they need a robot.
Oh, I'm with you, totally.
Like, strike's a strike, a ball's a ball, and let's move on. The technology's too good. Okay, you're probably not still going to get 100 out of 100. There is going to be some malfunctions or some little hiccups, but it's better than the human.
It's awful. Yeah. We saw the rally that started with two outs in the eighth inning in the first game of that series. Again, it was a two out rally. So think about how important even that last out is. If Altuve goes to first instead of going into the dugout, you don't know how that inning is going to end up.
Yes.
So it's so important that you have.
You're talking about Bregman?
Yeah. Was it Bregman?
Bregman.
Altuve. That's right. Bregman. But it's so important to get these things as right as possible.
Bregman ended up hitting two home runs after that. Mr. H has a good comment on Twitter. He says, tell Tom, Dino is a pet dinosaur, not a dog. Dino is short for dinosaur.
Okay. Guilty. I didn't know if it was a dog that was, they thought, I have no idea.
So lots of stuff going on
today. I haven't seen the Flintstones in 25 years.
Neither have I. I don't know how I pulled it, but you were talking about extinct animals.
Yeah.
And I started thinking of dinosaurs. I thought of the Flintstones.
Dino the dinosaur.
Really quick, on the Deshaun Watson ruling, we weren't on the air because the Sox game took. Well, how long did that game go? Was that a four-hour game?
I think it was 3:55 or something.
Yeah, like right at around 5 it ended. I heard Connor sign off at about 5:50 something. And then they just went to Black and Abdallah. But we didn't react to that, and I want to get to that. And we didn't react to the ruling that came down earlier in the day, the 11-game suspension, $5 million fine for Deshaun Watson. What'd you make of it?
I thought it was weak. I thought what was weaker was Deshaun Watson's response. Like, Deshaun Watson actually tried to show some remorse in the interview that he did prior to starting that first preseason game.
It was a week ago today, wasn't it?
Basically, he stood in front of the press yesterday and kind of took that apology back.
I stand on my innocence. And he says, I've just been apologizing to people who
were triggered. That's what he said.
Yeah, to all women or to anybody who may have had an issue with anything that's gone on.
Look, and from a football perspective, I've always thought he is a special, special, special player. I've also said to you, depending on how things went and how long the suspension was, this could be the worst trade in NFL history. And I get it. I'm in the minority there because a lot of people will say he's still 26 or 27 years old. Even if he's suspended for the entire 2022 season, he's going to be able to come back. And what if he leads you to this and leads you? That all well may be good, may be well and good. But what leads you to believe, again, this thought is reinforced by how he responded yesterday, that he's going to make all of the necessary right decisions going forward in this time away. Like, if I'm the Cleveland Browns, they obviously aren't concerned about this as I am. And Jimmy Haslam and his, he's 26. He makes some mistakes. Oh, really? I just would be fearful that from a pure football perspective, that he would once again make a bad decision that would lead to his inability to get back on the field.
I know you said, Tyler, that you have the sound from Watson. Do you have the apology from like a week ago before he played the first game with the woman on the local?
It was Aditi Quinkabala. She's a very good reporter.
It was on their pregame show, right? Yes. Wasn't it the local TV for their preseason games? This was before that game.
Your eligibility is still in question, and although this appeal is ongoing, I have to ask you, the initial ruling from Judge Sue Robinson made a very specific point of saying that your lack of remorse played into her decision-making. It's been a part of the narrative surrounding you. What is your response to that?
Look, I want to say that I'm truly sorry to all the women that I've impacted in this situation. My decisions that I made in my life that put me in this position, I would definitely like to have back. But I want to continue to move forward and grow and learn and show that, you know, I am a true person of character, and I want to keep pushing forward.
Grow and learn. We fully expect that there will be some time that you are away from the team. What does your growth on a personal level look like? How are you spending that time?
I know I have a lot of work to put in.
Okay, so that, like, it got the point across that I wanted to play anyway. The first part of that, he even says, I'd like to apologize to all the women I impacted. And then he also says, there are things that I wish I had back. It was as close to a real apology. The only reason he said that stuff was because it was being negotiated,
of course,
his settlement.
Yes.
And that was it. And the league's point was always there was never contrition. So as they were negotiating before they went, all he did was tell them what they wanted to hear. To yesterday, I think we have that apology, to where he doesn't sound anything like the dude who did that apology. Do you have yesterday's non-apology?
You're going to take a lot of heat for I stand on my innocence. I mean, I'm already seeing it all over social media. So, you know, what is going to be your response to that when the world comes down on you for standing on your innocence throughout this process?
Well, I have to do what's best for Deshaun Watson at the end of the day.
And then he, I think we're having some technical issues. He mentioned a lot of, I'm standing on my innocence.
Yes.
And like you said, the people that I'm apologizing to are the people that are, he never mentioned once in yesterday's press conference, I wish I could do it over. I wish I've learned from this. I didn't realize. Well, whatever you want to say, there was zero contrition
yesterday. What makes you believe he's going to take this second? Not you in general. I'm just saying football fans. What makes you believe he's going to take this second chance and actually make the most of it and not put himself in harm's way again?
I don't know.
I have zero confidence in that, or at the very least, very low confidence.
Here's what I'm wondering, too, with Watson, because this was talked about a little bit earlier in the week when they were in the appeals process, was that he was willing to pay a higher fine to get out of missing some games. Did the NFL maybe set a dangerous precedent of being able to buy your way out of a suspension? Because right now, the fine that he's paying at $5 million is over seven times the previous record for the highest individual player fine.
But it didn't buy him really out of a suspension because he's still going to miss 11 games.
But didn't the league want to settle on, the league punishment was 17 games. That's what they supposedly wanted, at least 17 games.
The numbers are so big in this league that I don't, honestly, Tyler, I don't think that that's, I don't think that's a huge component.
This is the second biggest fine the NFL's ever handed out, and the other ones are mostly organizational, like Washington when they had their scandal last year was $10 million, and then it's Watson at $5 million, and then prior to that the highest was the Broncos at a little shy of $2 million.
I don't think it's buying you
out of a suspension.
And I'm looking for the exact totals. Andrew Brandt's been all over this. What he is losing out on salary-wise is so minuscule.
It's like $645,000.
So I think the league wanted money because he wasn't losing money in the contract because of the way it was strategically negotiated. Yeah. For, you know, where, like, out of the two, well, how many, $200 million, how much is he making?
Like $240 was his,
And out of that, the only thing he's going to miss in game checks is, what, $500,000?
I think it was like $640,000, if I'm not mistaken.
Think about that. That's, I believe, why the fine is so high.
Well, and think about all of
this. Not because it bought him out of time.
First of all, he told you what he thought you wanted to hear last week. Now you get a better representation of probably who he is.
Right.
And if I'm a Browns fan, I am not confident that he is going to make good decisions going forward. And by the way, the NFL had to be very cognizant of the fact that when he does come back, he will be playing against the Houston Texans.
And I think that's dirty. I mean, how could you do that? How could you?
Because the NFL realized that, yes, it's going to be.
It's
going to
bring back all the, here's the thing from Brandt. Says 11 games, $5 million for Deshaun Watson. Here's the entire loss of income for Watson due to his behavior on the $230 million fully guaranteed contract. You hit it on the head. $650,000. That's it. He will make $229.35 million from the Browns fully guaranteed.
Well, and again, think about it. This is what FU money, the definition of it. It really is. Think about it. When I say that, think about the league. The league has the marbles in this situation because they can. To make sure, or to at the very least be aware of the fact that the suspension ends the week before they play the Houston Texans. Because the marketing opportunity for Deshaun Watson is back. And guess what? Not only is he back, he's going to play his former team, the Houston Texans. Like, just from a PR sensitivity perspective, because we all want this just to go away, we want to move on to a new chapter. Instead of, doing that, they cognizantly know, if that's even a word, that the first game he's eligible to play is against his former team.
We're gonna have a really tough stance on Deshaun. We are going to push for this. But you know what? When he does come back, we want that matchup against Houston. Like,
that is the definition of FU money.
Yeah.
It really is.
And hypocrisy.
And listen to what Jimmy Haslam has to say and how they handled this whole thing. And, I mean, look at what Daniel Snyder has done in the past, and Stephen Ross, how he has thumbed his nose at the league in certain ways. I mean, it's...
Let me get to Jimmy here, who wanted to talk about the Bears.
By the way, I love football. I mean, I still love football.
I do, but still, that's dirty, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, again, this is why, and I thought Deshaun Watson was I was mesmerized with his ability. I just don't...
I wanted him to be a Bear before the accusations came out.
If I'm the Cleveland Browns, again, I think this is a bad trade because there's just too much uncertainty.
Jimmy on the north side wanted to weigh in on the Bears, and then I've got some good... got some good sound on the White Sox from MLB Network. What's up, Jimmy?
How are you guys? How are you, fellas?
Good.
Happy Friday. Hope you guys get some nice plans for the weekend with the family.
Yeah. Football Fest tomorrow. Are you going, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you yes.
Well, why aren't you going?
Because I got two boys and a third on the way that won't come. So I'm on call 24/7.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
Well, that's fair. But you are going to call us from the delivery room, right? We've planned this
out.
100%. That's right.
Yeah,
of course.
100%.
Good.
So yesterday, or the last two preseason games, I wanted to talk. I'll talk Roquan in a sec, but I wanted to say that the two most refreshing things were when they raced up to the line after that first down in the first game, just to get the playoff. Before instant replay.
Right.
And I think that punt that they did, I think they would have challenged if it wasn't the preseason. But be that as it may, you just see a culture of, competent coaching in football. So I think that's a breath of fresh air. And Cap and Jay Hood had a shot or no shot, whatever that kind of means, about is Mooney the second best wide receiver in the NFC North.
Right.
And you can make that argument, right, I think?
I don't believe it'd be accurate, but you could try.
Waddle said
you
Thielen.
Could try.
Waddle said Thielen
as
of now.
Well, how could you not look at Thielen? Thielen had 10 touchdown catches last year and 14 the year before. He's got 24 touchdown catches the last 2 years. Darnell's got
so
eight.
So probably
total.
The third, And I think that just shows a lack of talent on the receiving side in the division. And the fact that the Bears went after, defensive backs, I think, it starts to make sense a little bit. I don't know if it's by accident or on purpose. But regardless, I wanted to talk about Roquan Smith because I think it's very important for people to understand cap inflation. as his five-year deal, we presume he signs a five-year deal, goes forward, at the end of it, you're going to look at about a $300 million salary cap in the NFL because it's pretty consistently goes up about 7%. So you're going to see positions across the board revalue up. And I think what I've heard is that Roquan's deal was heavily backloaded, which is terrible for the player because most of these five-year contracts only really get paid out in 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I think paying him now, you know, if he's X percent of the salary cap right now, that number is going to go down. And you really set yourself up with these rookies and with, you know, some pretty good defensive ends to be a pretty decent defense, and I love the fact they're focused on turnovers. So I just wanted to, you know, again, this is good optimistic, Jimmy. You know, I can switch any minute, but I really think, you know, I like those couple of things, and I think that Roquan should get signed for a deal that is fair to him.
I think that the value of these contracts, and thanks for the call, Jimmy, basically I look at them through the lens of how much is guaranteed. If you can, I mean, you backload a contract, you can put whatever number you want on it, but if money is due in year 4 and 5 and that player's never going to see that money, then how much is that contract really worth? So to me, the key number is how much is guaranteed.
Yeah, and then he probably wanted to renegotiate it anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Again, I don't think anyone's treating Roquan poorly as far as I know. If they value him in that position, let's just say $18 million a year, 5 years, $90 million, just for argument's sake, that would make him the third highest paid off ball linebacker in all of football. I mean, I make a good argument that Shaq Leonard's a better player. And I think probably Matt Eberflus would agree with that at this point. I think that Fred Warner may be a better argument. You may have a better argument against Fred Warner, but I don't think that that's the case with Shaq Leonard. And it's like everything else with this group. If you believe that you are being fair and you don't have him rated as the best off-ball linebacker in the league, why would you pay him to be the best off-ball linebacker in the league? Because he's up now?
Right. It's always been my argument.
I mean, so like that's where I want him to get an equitable deal. And I've always said to me the ultimate outcome is to find common ground because he's a hell of a player. But I don't think that if the offer is like 5 years, $90 million, I don't think they're doing him wrong with the offer.
Hopefully there will be some sort of a fork in the road here this week where he starts realizing he's going to have to get his body in shape, going to start having to practice because he's got to be ready for opening day.
Because by the way,
he's not going to hold out.
By the way, as well, he's making nine something this year.
Right,
they can franchise him the next 2 years. So, like, they're trying to work with him, signing him to a long-term deal. If they really wanted to bust his chops, they could take that path.
You're right. They don't have to re-sign him right now. They don't have to. All right, 312-332-3776. Connor's going to join us next. Before he does, though, I want to play you something from a former general manager who is on the MLB Network who just doesn't like the way the White Sox are constructed. You will hear that coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
All right, Connor McKnight's in studio. Before we go to Connor and ask him all sorts of White Sox questions, tonight's pregame starts in an hour from right now. 5:30 pregame big series against the Guardians. I want to play you this. Someone sent me this. I did not see it. It was from the MLB Network. Dana O'Dowd, who used to run the Colorado Rockies. I want to say for 15 years he ran the Rockies. He's an old school GM, though. This was him after the game yesterday where Houston put up 21. And this was his take on the White Sox and another, not just on Giolito, but one reason why he doesn't love this White Sox team.
I really question the roster to construction. I mean, Tony's caught a lot of heat, maybe justifiably so. You would know that better than I do.
Yeah.
But if you look at the lack of athleticism that really exists on the field, I mean, Robert's a tremendous athlete. Anderson's a tremendous athlete.
Neither are healthy.
They have struggled defensively to catch the ball the entire year. Is it because fundamentally individual players weren't sound to make the plays? Or is it because there are a lot of players that are playing out of position? When I look at that club, Jimenez to me looks like a DH. His body type has gotten to the point where he doesn't move that well in the outfield. Gavin Sheets, again, is an above average hitter, should not be playing right field. The Vaughn boy can flat out hit, should not be playing the outfield. I mean, these guys are first baseman's DHs. Running them out in the outfield is eventually going to cost your pitching staff. You're going to continually give up extra outs over and over again. Josh Harrison, for me, is an above-average defensive second baseman. Ideally, on a championship club, he plays multiple positions and helps you a variety of ways. Moncada plays the game indifferent to me. He doesn't play the game with like he's desperate and in love with playing the game. And so the individual parts on this team are exciting. The sum on the parts of this team is just not that exciting. It doesn't add up. You know, everybody says they're so talented. And I struggle with that statement over and over again when I hear it, because a team is made up of a collection of players that makes the team talented. They all have to fit together. The Dodgers all fit together. The Astros all fit together. I just don't see where this team, from a talent standpoint, fits together in an overall puzzle for the team to be talented enough to win games consistently.
Thought that was interesting. Food for thought with Dan O'Dowd.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln,
how'd you enjoy the play?
How was the 21-5 loss? My goodness, Dan.
You've said that a time or two in your life, haven't you?
You know, it feels that way, doesn't it? Listen, I don't think. No, 2020 was fine for me. I don't think that there's any doubt that Gavin Sheets and Andrew Vaughn, because he mentioned a few guys specifically here, right, are being asked to play out of position and doing their darndest to make better what is a clunky outfield right now. I think there are a couple of ways the White Sox clearly tried to address this, but haven't gotten everything that they wanted out of the ways they tried to, right? Spinning Craig Kimbrell off to the Los Angeles Dodgers so that he could do whatever the hell he's doing out there was a great move to go get AJ. Yeah. Like it was. It was a great move on paper to go to get AJ Pollock. AJ hasn't played all that well, hasn't produced the way you'd wanted, and hasn't been the kind of defensive outfielder in either corner that I think a lot of it expected. Now, I also think, I mean, whether it's the catch yesterday or just kind of the body of work, he's played a lot better defensively over the last month and a half.
And more comfortable, at the top of the order, too.
I think that matters, too, right? I think when we talk about Yoan Moncada, it's a complicated thing, right? And I mentioned this a lot, and I won't apologize for sounding like a broken record here because I think it's worth pointing out, and I'm sorry if you're tired of talking about it, but there's no one on this earth that's more tired about talking about what COVID did to people than I am. COVID sucks. It just does, right? And that he went through as long a case as he did has upset the timing of a lot of development. It's not linear. And if we're talking about what that lost development or, you know, fumbling around looks like for so many prospects that are making their major league debuts over the last couple of months. I mean, you look at everybody, like whether it's Shea Langeliers or Brett Beatty or whatever, all these guys that have come up over the last 3 months. They're all guys that didn't play baseball in 2020. And why we aren't mentioning that is a big factor in why maybe offense is down all over baseball. Or, you know, as part of a contributing factor, I don't know. I think we should be talking about that more.
I was going to say real quick, I was going to interject this. A lot of what he said, I get it. There is some clunky outfield play. There are moments when pitchers are going to give up more runs because of that. The defense behind them isn't so great.
No doubt.
The fact that this team hasn't slugged, which masks a lot of that stuff, I think is one of the biggest components that is missing from this squad. Their inability to hit the ball over the fence and mask some of those mistakes with huge run totals has been an enormous problem.
I think that's exactly. I think when Rick Hahn was having a press conference, I want to say it was his press conference to open spring training, or maybe it was shortly after they broke spring training and came back, you know, home after the first road trip. Yes, the this isn't the best defensive club. It wasn't last year.
Right.
But it should hit the hell out of the ball. I mean, it really should.
Yes.
And when you look around baseball right now, it's just looking at, you know, super nerd stuff, right? The fly ball distribution, all that kind of. If you're pulling the ball for power, you're hitting it well. Like you are reaping those results. going the opposite way, specifically out to right field for right-handed hitters, that's not happening right now, whether it's the White Sox or all over baseball. That is an issue. That could be the humidor. That could be breaking balls are more nasty than they've ever been before. That could just be a weird thing, right, that would click at the bottom of the page. But I do think that without walking and without hitting for power,
yeah,
it is really difficult for a team that was kind of planned to out-hit some of those clunkier mistakes or defensive alignments. It's hard to out-hit those if you're not literally out-hitting those.
They hit 102 home runs collectively this mm-hmm. year. Only the Royals, Nationals, Guardians, and Tigers have hit four.
Yeah, they're 26th in baseball yeah. in terms of home runs. Yeah. And go ahead and sort by their walks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
not I mean, great it's crazy.
And I think yesterday was like a day that they finally walked. Didn't they walk like eight times
they
yesterday?
They walked eight times!
And then they had 11 hits. You would have thought that would have been a big, fat 15 spot for the White Sox, and yet they still only get five because they don't hit the three-run homer. Moncada hit the one, that was it.
Well, there were three chances. That game could have been, it was 13-4 at one point, and honest, it could have been 13-9.
Right,
I mean,
right.
With two more hits, maybe three, I was, you know, kind of depending on, because Yasmani Grandal was on base at second, I think, for one of the hits that you needed, so maybe he goes two, maybe he doesn't, depends on where the hit
There's
goes.
Been no team in this league that has gotten less out of bases loaded and fewer than two outs than this team.
The White Sox are the only team in baseball that have failed to score with the bases loaded and no one out three times this year. It's tough. It is really difficult offensively. Yeah. And yet, here you are, 2.5 games back, playing the Cleveland Guardians. They just split a series by the grace of God against the Detroit Tigers. You saw how that Wednesday game finished, right? They struck out three times.
Yes. Right, yeah, and they scored
they
how many runs?
Struck out three eight, times and went on to score six runs.
Yeah, in the
in
eighth
one
eighth.
Inning.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's weird stuff. It's weird and wild stuff. But this Central is not a division. You know, I thought it was. We all thought it was going to be one where one team could maybe run away and hide. It has not
no
been
one wants
that.
It.
And because of this schedule, I think this thing comes down to the final 2 weeks. I don't know whether it's the Twins or the White Sox or the Guardians at this point. I still think that the White Sox are, despite what Dan O'Dowd told you, the most talented team in this division. I also think, I was reading this on Fangraphs too. You guys know Dan Zimborski. He runs the Zips projections. He doesn't run it. He has the algorithm that does it. Dan was writing about what a shortened playoff series benefits the White Sox, or how it benefits them and, you know, every other team, because of the pitching that they can throw against opponents. That short playoff series should, you know, based on the algorithm, benefit the White Sox more than any other team in baseball because of the pitching they can throw out there.
I
That's
just
only
don't trust
strengthened.
Them.
What, to
Connor,
get there?
I don't trust them. No, not necessarily that. I just don't trust them. And look, again, from my perspective, winning the division is step one. I get it. But my sights were set on a lot higher than, hey, this team is still hanging around despite not playing great. This still, you know, is highly disturbing.
And I think that's completely fair. I think the general manager has spoken about this too. Like they have not asked for their expectations coming into last season to be altered at all.
Right.
I credit them for that. They are also not, you know, it looks like right now it's going to be difficult for them to live up to those expectations. However, they're one hit away from taking 3 of 4 from the Houston Astros and some of the best starters they've got, with the exception of Lance McCullers. They played that series well. And I also think, you know how, like, you know, you get to a football game, you know, like an NFL game, and you look at the matchups, right? Well, the way the Bears are going to have to win this, they're going to have to turn the ball over three times. You have to play their, because if you play their style, if you play the Rams style of football or whatever, you have no chance. The White Sox played their style of baseball for 3 games out of 4 against the Astros. Can you do that in a playoff series? I don't know. But they pitched really well against one of the best offenses in baseball and kept it on their terms.
And they had to have two miraculous comebacks against the best bullpen in baseball. Listen, it's Friday. I don't want to be, so I'm going to stop with the negative comments. I'm just
a
frustrated
fan watching.
I've got
one more part of this.
Okay.
I loved the Giolito story. Like the Ethan Katz, Lucas Giolito story.
Absolutely.
I picked him in 2021 to win the Cy Young. I thought the 2020 year was one step, like the Arrieta 14 season.
Sure.
And then in 15, he was ready. And his 2021 ended up at the end of the year being much better than many people thought.
Finished 11th in Cy Young voting.
Yeah. So what the hell has happened to him this year?
He's right now, it looks to me like Lucas has one pitch he can trust, and unfortunately that is a changeup right now. The fastball is down to around 92, 93, and it doesn't have the revs, the revolutions per second that we'd seen in the past. So when he is, even when he is spotting that fastball, the home run he gave up to Mancini was kind of where he wanted that pitch, more or less. Mancini put a good swing on it and drove it out to right, something that I was just saying can't be done in baseball anymore. But you can if it's 93 and not spinning all that fast. Right. So, Luke, to me, the quest for Lucas the rest of the season is to find a way to throw the slider four strikes. It doesn't have to be at this point, because developing a wipeout slider, you know, August 18th or whatever day we are at, that's a difficult task. But you need to be able to throw that breaking pitch, or the curveball for that matter, if it feels better to you. It has to be thrown four strikes. It can't be this, you know, one pitch, maybe two sort of thing, and then rebuild yourself kind of into the offseason. The velocity is an issue. The workaround is finding that breaking pitch.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting offseason for them and see if they find common ground. Connor's brought to you by HawkAuto.com. Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW all in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland saves big. New starting shortstop for the Sox tonight.
Elvis Andrus is your guy. He's got a 97 weighted runs created plus right there, league average offensively. But I think everybody understands that you're signing a shortstop August. What day is it? Is it the 19th?
19th.
I know that we play at 6:10 tonight. Yeah, that's right. All I know about my life right now. If you're signing a guy at this point, he is a guy that's going to fill in. This is an absolute necessity for the White Sox at this point. You need a guy to play representative defense and representative offense. He's hitting seventh in the lineup tonight. Lenin Sosa goes back down to AAA. More development time there will help for sure. I think Lenin's still a prospect in this league, and especially with the way the White Sox prospect class kind of shakes out. But Andrus is there to be a guy to pick it up and throw it over. You know, that's what's got to happen for them.
They just need somebody to play solid baseball for a while.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what they need, and that's what they ought to get from Andrus, too.
Why did they get rid of the second trade deadline when you had to get through waivers?
I don't know. Like, I don't
like
it.
That would be nice to still go out and make a move
I'm with you. I get that it uncomplicates things, but I love the waiver deals.
Me too.
You know, it made it fun. It was like this archaic thing where you got to go look at baseball and be like, well, back in the day, Lefty O'Doul moved in a waiver. You know what I mean? Like, you got to do that kind of stuff. And Justin Verlander was a waiver trade.
Yes. Everyone would put their guys through waivers, even if they weren't intending to trade them.
I liked
it. They always did that with Alfonso Soriano on the north side.
Everybody got placed on waivers. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, the little known fact is that the entire roster mostly at some point was placed on waivers. And then if
come
you got
get
claimed,
guys.
Well, that was the Alex Rios. That's how Alex Rios ended up in Chicago.
Oh, another good name.
They didn't think they were going to get claimed. He took the whole thing. Your guy, Franmil Reyes, who is now clubbing it for the White Sox.
You just called him the Northside Poppy, right? Isn't that what you've named him?
I wasn't the first. I got to look back to see who was the first one to whisper that in my ear. But that's the hope.
He's fun.
The hope is
Northside Poppy.
That he is a big poppy after the Twins decided in the same division that, look, he's not doing the things that we wanted him to do. So now Boston picked him up and he becomes a Hall of Famer.
I hope that's the case. I hope for your lips to God's ears, you know, and that he's in the National League is fine. It's fun. I think waiver trades are fun like that. I think they can make a lot of things match up for teams like this, too.
Yeah.
Especially when we have, you know, 55 teams in the playoffs like this.
Yeah.
You know, if we're going to let everybody in the playoffs, then why not allow for more opportunities to get yourself
in? And I also don't like game 163 being eliminated. Jesse was talking about
that's
that
gonna
today.
That's going to piss some people off at the end of the year.
I am already angry.
Cleveland and the Sox tie at the end of 162, it's the head-to-head. Right now, the Guardians have a big lead there,
No doubt.
Like, game 163 was pure fun. And I know that their theory now is, well, we got so many rounds of playoffs that we don't have time to fit this in. But the thrill of game 163 is magical. One of my favorite memories on the South Side in 08 was
the blackout
game 163.
With John Danks, no doubt. I think, listen, we all know as baseball fans that a short series does not always give you the best team coming out of that short series, right? So I honestly, I think the way to solve that is steering into the skid. Let it be one game. Let everything be on the line. Say the hell
so
with
great.
It.
Yes.
Let's just play one. We'll see what happens, and it'll be weird, and we'll appreciate it for the weirdness. You yes. do a five-game series, and you're like, oh, yeah. man, this is going to be a week of this.
Right, right. All right, Connor is brought to you by Waddles, guys. Yes. Waddle?
I already told everyone about that.
Oh, I missed
that.
It. Hawk,
you missed it, Hawk?
Yeah.
Love
Fridays are different in the studio.
Yes, I love it.
I really like it.
I think they pump in some sort of, you know, different chemical in here on Friday.
Really? Is that what that smell is?
Yeah.
What is the worst? Sylvie's wearing a T-shirt right now. I don't know if you've talked about this yet. It says the worst free agent move of the offseason.
Yeah, this is an obvious shirt. This is from a year ago. There's a quote, and look at the color. That gives it away.
Yeah. Oh, it's the DeMar DeRozan, shirt. That's right. Oh, that's a good shirt. Yeah. I like that shirt.
It's a good shirt.
I like that shirt.
And they
it's good.
Nothing
I was going to be a wise ass and say it was the shortstop Simmons they signed on the north side. But since the Cubs have won 5 in a row, and that's all we talk about in this studio now, it breaks.
Really? Is that what it is?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Christopher Morel.
Oh, there they come. They're not terrible.
Oh, Christopher.
Here they come.
That's my theme for today.
Would you pass me that Hawk Auto Read so I can fan myself?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm gonna wipe myself.
The Bears may not suck, and the Cubs don't suck.
That's where we are in Chicago good, sports.
But the Bears may not suck.
Are we there? The Bears may not suck?
We're hoping that that could be the
all
case.
Right. I've yet to, you know, I'm compiling all of the preseason games to watch when the White Sox season is over.
I think that you should just
watch the regular season.
Watch the regular season.
I shouldn't
season.
Go back study tape. All right. That's fair.
All right, Connor. 5:30.
Fellas,
we'll be listening.
To you then. Can you guarantee us a win today?
Absolutely. Sure. Guaranteed. Thank you.
Connor is. Oh, that's a good story. Last 45 minutes of the show. Connor McKnight is guaranteed a White Sox win
that's
tonight.
That's right. And I'm going to hit 3 home runs.
Free Ticket Friday coming up and what to watch for next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
Free Ticket Friday.
Let's go 500 on this very important series.
We'll strike out and we will hit singles all day. No one will be driven home. We'll lose by 3.
You're the Eminem of White Sox riffs.
And they're never positive. This is where I get my White Sox angst out.
But it's a 3-game series.
I'm frustrated.
You can't split the series.
Oh, they'll find a way. They'll find a way. This is the epitome of being an average team, finding a way to split a 3-game series.
They will play 20 innings and they'll just say, let's call it a tie.
Tapped out. Tony's got to go back to the hotel.
And I think that happens before 20, doesn't it?
I'm horrible. I apologize.
Right now, Free Ticket Friday brought to you by Miller Lite, 312-332-3776. You get 2 free tickets to a White Sox game. You don't get to sit next to Tony and tell him what to do, but they are good seats, and you'll enjoy them.
Aren't you frustrated? Like, you get like your White Sox blood is flowing. They win 2 really cool games. They get to an Astros bullpen that had been 65-3 on the season when leading in the 7th inning or later.
Right. And then they embarrassed themselves in the last game.
Come from behind wins. And then the following day, Michael Kopech doesn't watch as there's all kinds of Astros just running around the bases. Unattended.
It was Altuve in the first.
Whoever it was. And then yesterday. And after all of that, hey, maybe this is the time. Like, they created some momentum.
Like I said, they scored 21 with Bregman striking out on a pitch that I think should have been the second base runner in the inning.
I think so.
And A.J. Pollock robbed, who did he rob of a home run? Was that Altuve?
Yeah.
That was a hell of a catch, too. Think about how many runs they would have scored if those things didn't happen.
I'm just saying, like, it's just stop and start, stop and start, stop and start. I feel like I'm in a car driven by one of my kids when they were 15 and I was teaching them how to drive.
Did you say, too, that Tony was ripping the thing about pitching your position players?
He did have a comment about how the rule stinks that you're allowed to do it, but yet did it.
Yeah, so what, I mean...
Dude, I mean, like,
you got to save the pen for this important series.
I get it.
Throw any more arms. You have to do it.
Should
you just give? I mean, look, we're throwing a position player anyway. You guys won. We're not
this pitching is where,
a bullpen
like,
arm.
I'm with you. Like, they to preserve bullpen arms in the past, they decided to go seven inning doubleheaders, right, and put somebody on second base in extra innings.
Right. That was COVID. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean. You can't tell me that you're not willing to do
like
stuff to preserve
rule.
Arms.
Or was that's going to what's that going to teach the children? You could just quit? Like the Sox at the end of seven should have been like, we're done. The end of eight, we're done.
I think going into the ninth inning, there should be a tap
nine,
rule.
Yeah.
Yeah, going into the ninth inning. If you want to tap.
Yeah, it's got to be a record, right? Position players this year. Winning teams do it now, too.
Yeah.
When they're up so bad.
I was surprised that the Astros threw one of their bullpen guys.
Yeah. All right, let's go to what to watch for next. Want to talk about the Bears.
Waddle
and
Sylvie,
hold on. Hold that thing on. Not now. Next, we'll do that. And
I told you, they pump in some sort of chemical into the studio.
And I want to talk about the Bears. If you want to weigh in on what you saw last night, are you more optimistic? 312-332-3776.